listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
Canes fans, what up, what up, what up? It is the Forza Podcast, and it is Tuesday, September 8th, and we are here. It is time. This is the last show of the offseason because our Canes kick off in 48 hours from right now to beat the shit out of the UAB Blazers.
Yes,
it
sir.
It is your boy Marsh, and as always, I am joined by my wonderful producer and co-host, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, it's here. We did it.
It is here. We're friggin' pumped. We're trying to finalize our food plans for Thursday because we're getting together and probably gonna broadcast that.
I couldn't sleep last night. I probably won't be able to sleep tonight, and I sure as hell won't be able to sleep tomorrow night. This is a time unlike any other that is better than any other time in the year. It's Miami Hurricanes football season. And we have reason to be excited this year.
Yes,
this is the season we've waited so long for, and it is here.
Yeah.
I'm just so happy, and I'm so excited. And Ricky on Twitter is tweeting from the Storm Surge account, and he is getting me hyped up. So, I've been pretty calm for the past few days, but I'm not going to lie. I can't really hide anymore, man. It's here. I know for our first guest, I'm going to have to keep it low because he's a UAB guy.
Yeah. But we'll have to be respectful. But inside, we're secretly telling him that we're going to destroy by 60 or 70 points.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Let's just say first, it's your birthday tomorrow.
It is my birthday tomorrow. I'm very excited.
Happy birthday, my friend.
Thanks, man. Yeah, the big 2-7.
2-7.
Yeah, and then but what a way to celebrate, right? Is the day after we're going to be watching the game at your place and just basking in the glory of Derek King and Red
getting lit and getting fit.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we got two guests coming up for you guys today. First one, he covers UAB, so we're gonna talk a little Blazers football with him. So what do you say we get him on?
Yeah, for sure. What was his name again?
Evan Dudley.
Cool. Excited to have Evan on.
Hey, Evan, what's going on, man? How are you?
Doing well.
Pretty good. Awesome. Cool. So we now welcome on Evan Dudley. He covers UAB for, is it AL.com? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, AL.com, Alabama Media Group, but okay. AL.com's website.
Good deal. And so we got you on to talk a little UAB football. The Blazers and the Canes kick off on Thursday. Obviously, you guys already had a game last week. I wanted to first talk about something not 2020 related, though. So UAB back in, was it 2015 and 2016, their football program was shut down. Is that correct?
Yes, technically it is. Right after the 2014 season, they beat Southern Miss to end the season, got bowl eligible. That was Clark's inaugural season with UAB. And probably maybe just a few days after that weekend, the program was shut down. And about 6 months later, through a lot of local support, they finally reinstated it. And then 2015 and 2016, they didn't have a team.
Wow. That's incredible. Because I, fun fact, I used to live in Dothan, Alabama, during those years, actually, and there was no UAB football team. And here we are ready to play you guys. So how has Coach Bill Clark been able to turn that program around so quickly? I mean, you guys went 9-5 last year. I believe you went 11-3 the year before. What's been his secret to success?
Well, Bill Clark has been very successful wherever he's been. He started in the high school ranks here in Alabama. He worked his way up to the head coaching position at Prattville, had a great run there. I believe two state titles in a row. I believe it was like 30-something and 0 at one point. Went to South Alabama's defensive coordinator and then took Jacksonville State job, his alma mater, for 1 year, and then went to UAB. After that, they shuttered the program for 2 years. But during those 2 years, he was able to build it back. He got a lot of transfers in from around the country to kind of build that program so they could kind of instantly compete a little bit better than, you know, say SMU coming out of the death penalty in the late 80s, where they pretty much had just all walk-ons and freshmen on that team. So that helped a whole lot. And then from there, just, you know, they had a new operations complex built. They have a new stadium on the way. So a lot of investment has been made into the program, and that's been attractive to recruits. And they've been able to get some good recruiting here. You know, they actually go to Miami, South Florida a lot. They've got a lot of guys from South Florida on this team. That's one of the priorities, you know, in this region, the Southeast region. So he's kind of built it on, you know, JUCO transfers, and you've started seeing a balance back towards more of a, you know, a prep heavy class. But it's kind of been built, you know, through that. And, you know, the guy just knows how to compete, knows how to coach. And I mean, he loves to practice. I mean, he absolutely loves to practice. And so that's a big thing of their program. But, you know, that's, you know, a lot of those things kind of combined to, you know, where he was able to build this program to where it came out competing and has, you know, entered an era where it has not seen it before.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's you know, I've been studying you guys for the past like day, getting ready for Thursday's game, and you know, looking at your offense, looking at your defense is very, very, very solid, I must say. But so I want to ask you about Tyler Johnston at quarterback. I know, you know, he can be a little up and down at times. You know, 17 touchdowns, but also 15 picks last year. How did he look last week against Central Arkansas, and are Blazers fans confident in him this year, or are they kind of holding their breath, do you think?
Last week he looked pretty well. They didn't throw it a whole lot. They gave Bryson Lucero, the backup, a couple series to kind of, you know, give him a few reps here and there, live game action. But Tyler played well for when he was in there. He did throw one pick, but he had two touchdown passes. And I mean, he looked pretty good, looked, you know, in command of the offense. It just comes down to where, you know, pressure situations where he might try to fit a ball where it shouldn't be. You know, if you look at a lot of his interceptions, they come on a lot more on intermediate routes, you know, because he's one of the more accurate deep ball passers in the nation. As far as, you know, Blazer fans, I think they hold their breaths a little bit. I think they understand, you know, you got good Tyler and bad Tyler. And when good Tyler is on, you know, he's a very accurate QB, can score a lot of points for UAB. And if he's bad, that usually leads to a loss, because that usually means there's a lot of turnovers happening. And that's the one thing they cannot afford.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing that I know Miami's defense is going to try and do is, you know, force some ill-advised throws and things like that. So on offense, I noticed two really good players you guys have, running back Spencer Brown and then wide receiver Austin Watkins. I really like him. I think he's a baller. Is this more of a spread offense or a pro style offense? What kind of scheme is UAB running on that side of the football?
Actually, it's kind of more of a combination of both. There's a lot of spread principles. You know, they're going to run their QB a little QB power. They're going to, you know, they're going to line up, you know, 6-7, you know, linemen or, you know, tight ends, and they're going to run the ball right at you. But they'll also spread it out and throw it because they've got a lot of receivers. You mentioned Austin Watkins. He's a cousin of Sammy Watkins with the Chiefs. He's, you know, he's a fast guy. He's got an NFL body. You know, he's, you know, 6 foot something, you know, 200 something pounds. He's made for the NFL. And, you know, he was only the third UAB player to get 1,000 yards in the season last year. That's a small list, with Roddy White being one of them. So, I mean, he's built to make the big plays. And Spencer Brown is, you know, he's about 20, 30 pounds lighter than he was the past few seasons. He's had a couple injuries, but he seems to kind of gotten through all of that. He's UAB's all-time leading rusher. And in last Thursday's game, he looked slick. He looked fast. He looked like a new player, you know, something we haven't seen since maybe his freshman year, but maybe a little bit faster and a little bit more nimble, perhaps.
Okay. So, I mean, those are the two big names on offense for you guys. Who is maybe one other or two other players on offense that Miami fans should take note of? And then what's also a weakness on offense, do you think, for UAB going into this game? Because our strength has always been defense the last few years. And, Yeah. Well, what do you think is the biggest strength for UAB's offense and also weakness?
Well, UAB's pretty deep on offense. You got a couple running backs behind Spencer Brown. You have Jermaine Brown Jr. He's a true sophomore. You have Lucius Stanley. I believe he's from the Fort Myers era. Fort Myers era in South Florida. You know, he led the Blazers in touchdowns last year on the ground. So you have capable backups, so, you know, they can switch out, you know, if Spencer needs a break. Receivers, you have Myron Mitchell. He has a tendency to make great catches, some of those spectacular catches you see along the sidelines. Myron Mitchell has the capability of doing those, and he's very fast. Returned a kickoff, you know, last year for a touchdown. He's got moves. So he can, you know, he can be a weapon out there in space. You got two tight ends, Hayden Pittman and Garrett Prince. Garrett Prince got involved a whole lot last week with two touchdown catches. They're bringing Joe Craddock. He was the former offensive coordinator at Arkansas. He's the tight ends coach now, so he's kind of progressed that possession a little bit more than they have in the past few years. The offensive line is pretty solid. They've got experience back. The only, you know, I guess the really weakness is just, you know, they have depth, but is that depth good enough to withstand, you know, a Power 5 team like Miami, who has great defensive depth? You know, even with, you know, a couple guys that might have opted out, you know, Miami's defense is still going to be very stacked and very good. It's been a top 20 defense the past few years, so it's, you know, it's no slouch at all. So it's really comes down to that offensive line, if they can, you know, brave that defensive front of Miami.
Yeah. Yeah, well, what really impresses me about your guys' offensive line is you guys are big. I mean, they got really good size on the offensive line. I can't remember what you know, how tall they were averaging at, but I mean, they're a lot taller and bigger than our DNs and things like that. So on defense, I know a lot of people are making a big deal that Central Arkansas scored 35 points last week, but you know, when you look at the box score, UAB, they didn't allow 300 yards of offense, and it came a lot of those touchdowns for UCA came off of turnovers. So what stood out to you last week about the defense? Because I'm assuming from, you know, studying UAB a little bit, that seems to be the strength of the Blazers team. I mean, you guys have veterans all over. So, you know, looking back at last week and also, you know, even in the preseason, what would you say is some of the biggest strengths for the UAB defense and also some of those weaknesses?
The only weakness that I could probably see, I'll go ahead and start off with that just because I can only see one, and that might be the depth of the defensive line. You lose a guy like Garrett Marino. You know, he is a big-time baller for those guys, just a monster on that line. But they've got kind of more – they got a little bit more guys this year in the rotation than they've had when he was on the line. So it just comes down to whether those guys are ready to step up and play. You know, you got a couple guys who did really well last year, but, you know, it comes down to that depth within that position group. With the outside linebackers, you've got NFL guys on the outside with Jordan Smith and Alex Wright. Alex Wright's a true sophomore, but he's, you know, already 6.5 foot tall, 240 pounds. Same with Jordan Smith, a former Florida player. You know, those two guys are NFL type, you know, rush ends. And then on the middle, you have Chris Moll, Miami native, went to Coral Gables High. You know, he's going to be primed for this game. He's not going to need anything to kind of pump him up for it. You know, he's been waiting for this one for a while. And Noah Wilder in the middle, and those guys are just, you know, absolute tackling machines. And then in the secondary, you've got, you know, four cornerbacks with extensive starting experience. One of them is not playing this game, Starling Thomas. He had an offseason surgery. He hadn't been able to return yet from that. He might return later this year, but we really don't know anything about that yet. As far as that, though, you've got CeeDee Daniels, T.D. Marshall, and Bronte Harris, all with extensive playing experience. So the secondary is very well experienced, the two safeties as well as their star nickelback, who is pretty much a safety at this point and within their defensive alignment. So they've got a lot of strengths on defense. It just depends on if they can, you know, keep De'Aaron King, you know, contained a little bit.
Well, I mean, that is I think that's going to be one of the biggest things to watch. I mean, we're so excited for De'Aaron King to be here because you probably know we've had some issues at quarterback the last few years. And another big issue is our offensive line. You know, we got a new O-line coach. We got a few new guys, you know, at right tackle, left tackle, but those two guys, Jordan Smith and Alex Wright, those guys are animals. I mean, I think Smith had like 8 sacks and 14 and a half tackles for loss last year. Are those guys, are they rushing almost every down, or are they dropping into coverage sometimes, or how does UAB like to play them?
I think they pass rush more often than not. They might get back into coverage from time to time. You know, they've got a few pass breakups between themselves. So it's a really, it's more situationally, but more often than not, they're going to send them off. Their outside linebackers coach is Nick Gentry. He was the co-defensive MVP for Alabama in 2011, along with Courtney Upshaw. Courtney Upshaw is an assistant volunteer this year. So you got a little bit more, you know, you got some wisdom from that guy who was a second round pick with the Ravens, had a great NFL career before he got into coaching. And so those guys are very much in the mold of how, you know, Nick Saban ran his defenses with those outside linebackers, you know, coming off the edge. And Nick Gentry very much prides that group off of what they can do in pass rushing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, I think we gave up the most sacks last year of any Power Five school. So, you know, that is it's going to be a question mark for us, and UAB is going to be a great first test to see how far we've come. So, I had another question. What was it going to be? Jordan, do you have anything?
Well, yeah, I would love to hear the narrative around the UAB program right now in regards to this game. Like, how are you guys feeling about this matchup with Miami? I know you're coming off a 9-win season. You know, watching that Central Arkansas game, I have to say I was expecting a little more out of UAB. But, you know, I'd love to hear your guys' perspective. Do you feel like, I mean, it's not like we played great against, you know, group of five teams last season. So how do you guys feel about this matchup?
I think it's a very interesting matchup. Before even last year, I felt this would be a, you know, a very good game for UAB to kind of test where they are as a program. You know, when you look at it, especially with what's going on in the world right now, especially last game, I think these early games, you're not going to really be able to tell, you know, a lot of things. I think a lot of, you know, advantages might be kind of thrown out the window. You know, Miami has 13,000 capacity for this Thursday game. That's maybe, you know, about 300 more than what UAB had at their home game for their opener last week. So, you know, that's kind of an advantage taken away a little bit from some teams. And it's just a strange world with this. So so you got to look at that Central Arkansas game a little bit more in context. You mentioned briefly, three of those scores were off turnovers. One of them was a fumble, a scoop and score. One of them was a 15-yard drive. Another one was a 4 or 6-yard drive, I forget. And then the other two touchdowns were late in the fourth quarter against second teamers. So you got to look at a lot of context with that. So I think they could have been more impressive looking, but at the same time, Bill Clark's an old high school guy, old high school coach. And so I think he likes to play things closer to the vest than what people might think. So I think he might have been holding a few things back for this game. But as far as the fans and the kind of feeling around them, as well as the program, I think they believe they have a, you know, they feel really good about this game, you know, because, you know, just with everything kind of going on and, you know, and the weaknesses and strengths kind of match up with one another. UAB has great defensive pressure. Miami did not have good offensive protection last year. And, you know, Miami's got a great defense, can force turnovers, and UAB has had a problem with turnovers. So it kind of matches up very evenly from that aspect. So it'll really just come down to the, you know, the depth of each team, and that's usually what we see in Power Five programs versus Group of Five programs. But UAB seems to have really built depth like an SEC team, because that's how they're built, with a big offensive line and a very aggressive defense.
Yeah, it certainly will be interesting. You bring up a good point. Excuse me. With the you know, COVID and stuff like that, and also, you know, Miami is bringing in a new offensive coordinator. We have a new starting quarterback, and they didn't get spring camp. They had an abbreviated fall camp. So it's not like there's been a ton of time for everyone to familiarize themselves with these new offensive schemes. We actually have a lot of new players that are going to get a lot of time. You know, I think, what was it? 5 of the 9 wide receivers that are listed on our depth chart for week 1 are freshmen or redshirt freshmen. You know, new quarterback. We two of our three running backs on the depth chart are freshmen. So we're going to have a lot of new players in, and it will be really interesting to see how well the Miami offense is gelling to start this season. You know, it might not look as pretty as we want it to. So that could certainly play to UAB's advantage when we match up on Thursday.
Yes. I'd agree with that. It's going to be such an interesting year with a lot of teams and how they play play their opponents, just with everything kind of going on. And it's going to be interesting, to say the least.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this whole year has just been wacky, and I'm just so happy that we're finally getting, I mean, you guys already played last week, but we've been waiting so long for this game, and it had to be rescheduled because I think we were supposed to play y'all in week three originally. And now it's week one, and it's the first game with De'Aaron King and new offensive coordinator Rhett Lashley. So my last question for you is, if Miami, because this is, I think it's going to be a little bit closer than people think. I think people are downplaying UAB's talent on defense, especially their defensive line. I really like Watkins at receiver and Spencer Brown at running back. He's a bulldozer. If Miami wants to come out and have a statement win, give me three things that they have to do against UAB on Thursday night.
They have to force Tyler Johnson into mistakes. They have to get him turning the ball over. If they do that, that would be the one and only key that would really need to do, because that seems to be their Achilles heel in the past. But number two, they got to ball up the run game, which that kind of goes hand in hand with forcing Tyler Johnson into mistakes. Because if you take away the running game, they're going to force more passes from Tyler, and that will ultimately lead to more mistakes. And the third thing would be De'Aaron King needs to take control. He needs to be aware of that defensive front for UAB, because if he is able to get space, he's able to make plays, then that will kind of get them off center a little bit. And if they've got the other thing going on defensively with holding UAB's offense down, then Miami can have a chance to actually run away with this game. So it comes down to a lot of, you know, forcing UAB's offense to make mistakes more so than the defense.
Okay. Well, if you had to make a score prediction on this game, you know, I promise we won't throw any rocks at you if you predict a UAB win. But if you had to predict a score, what would you say it will be?
I'd go right now. Let's go with the upset. UAB 27.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, man.
All right. Hey, Evan, that was a great interview, man. I mean, are you going down to Miami to cover the game?
I won't be able to. We're just having to watch our travel budget, as well as liability issues and everything with everything going on. So we're kind of cutting back on travel right now. So, you know, I'll be catching on ACC Network, but hopefully I'll be able to get my Zoom interviews and be able to get everything on deadline. Actually, it'll probably be easier at the house, but we'll kind of see how this season goes, and you know, we'll see. But you know, if things change, I'll let y'all know.
Cool. All right, man. Thank you so much. Sorry, go ahead, Jordan.
Well, I was just saying, best of luck. You know, we wish you and UAB a fun season, and you know, I know more than anything, we're just excited to kick off on Thursday. So I'm sure it'll be a good time for everyone involved.
Same to you guys. I got to tell myself a little bit. You know, I'm not a Miami fan, but I believe the U needs to be the U in college football, because sure. I'm an Alabama alum. So many great battles between Alabama and Miami. The U needs to be on the national scene. I mean, it's just a fabric of college football to me. And I'm a big Jimmy Johnson fan. So.
We love Jimmy around here, man.
If y'all haven't read Turning the Thing Around, his biography did, autobiography did with Ed Hinton from ESPN, writer for ESPN. He did the autobiography with him, Turning the Thing Around, after he won Super Bowls at Dallas. And it's a great book, and he's got a lot of great stories from, you know, when he was at Oklahoma State to whenever he was at Miami. But I love Jimmy Johnson, one of my favorite coaches ever.
Absolutely. He's the best. I'm a diehard Cowboy fan too. Yeah. So
I'm a kid of the 90s. So, you know,
Yes, sir. Well, Evan, thank you so much, brother. And enjoy the rest of your season, and good luck to you guys on Thursday. Hopefully, you know, nobody gets hurt and we get a good game.
Same to you guys. Y'all have a great evening.
You too, brother.
Cool, man. Well, we certainly need to stop Alabama from, you know, getting the Julio Jones, Jerry Judy's and Amari Cooper's out of South Florida if we're ever going to get back to where they are.
Yeah, I mean, row tide, man. Go Alabama. Oh, man. That just, like, brought me back to my short time when I was living in Alabama. That's a good old place, boy. Let me tell you.
Alabama or Tallahassee?
Oh, Alabama every single day, every single second of every minute. Tallahassee sucks.
Did you just feel dirty when you were there?
It's so dirty, man. It's disgusting. It's like so. It's so like.
It's so Florida State-y.
It's so Florida State-y. And like, there's like every guy that you see there is like some roided up douche who drives around in a Jeep with his pie cap, with his freaking pie cap alpha sticker on the back of his Wrangler Jeep. And they're just such tools, man.
Yeah.
Sorry, you got me on a rant.
I heard it smells like herpes when you walk past campus too.
Smells like herpes, heartbreak, and crab legs.
And women with stinky feet.
Right? They got some pretty women there, I won't lie.
Really?
Well, I mean, yeah, the girls that go to FSU, they are some pretty women here.
Yeah, well, they can come to your house on Thursday and watch the game with us.
Yeah, yeah, I'll fly them from Tally to Salt Lake City. These two podcast guys want to watch a Canes game with you.
Yeah. Come on down.
All righty. Is our second guest ready to go?
So Justin needs just a few minutes to set up, but he's, he's close.
Okay. That little bastard. Oh, man. If the Heat don't win tonight, I am going to have an aneurysm.
Yeah. Did you see that Giannis isn't playing?
Yep. Giannis isn't playing. Like, there's no reason that we shouldn't win. Like, the Heat have to win tonight. The Canes have to blow UAB out on Thursday. Cowboys have to win on Sunday. And I'm back. Just like that, I'm back. Right?
We are back.
We are back. I mean, I need some cheering up because this past weekend, as you guys know, I enjoy sports betting a little bit too much.
Your wallet doesn't, but you do.
Oh my gosh. Your boy went 0-for-5 the first weekend of college football. I bet on Navy last night.
Well,
BYU, the Storm and Mormons. What the hell was that? It's like they were playing on freshman level on NCAA.
I know. It was a whole bunch of Mitt Romney's, progeny that was just destroying the Naval Academy.
It was insane, man. It was like I've never seen like a game like that in D1 where the other team just literally obliterates it like it's a video game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I need some wins. I need some wins this weekend in betting. I did want to ask you though, any thoughts on the depth chart that was released yesterday?
Yeah, I had a few thoughts actually. Let me pull up my Twitter feed because I really kind of dug into it yesterday.
Okay.
And I kind of forgot some of the stuff that I was saying. Here's one. So if you noticed, we only have one senior lineman, and that's Jared Williams. Mm-hmm. So I think our offensive line group is going to continue to get quite a bit better, which is really nice. And then, I said in the UAB guy interview with Evan, 5 of the 9 wide receivers listed are freshmen or redshirt freshmen. So that could be concerning. Overall, the theme was just how young we are. You know, we have a lot of experience at starting positions, but our depth is all freshmen and redshirt freshmen or sophomores. like, we really don't have experience past, you know, the starting roles. And then
I mean, on offense, like, really the only seniors that you have is De'Aaron King, Jared Williams, and Mike Harley. The other eight starters on offense are juniors or younger.
Well, and two of those dudes are new.
It's pretty wild when you think about it, man. And then on defense, you know, Roche's a senior, Ford's a senior, McLeod's a senior.
Yeah.
Besides that, it's pretty young.
Here's a crazy stat, man. So our depth chart, I mean, my numbers might be a little bit off, but we have like 73-ish players listed on the depth chart. Okay, and 24-ish of those guys, only 24 of those 73 players were coached by Mark Richt.
Wow.
Which is insane.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah. And considering that we're only one season removed, I mean, Manny's only coached 1 year.
That seems like so long ago.
I know, right?
The Richt era seems like ages ago.
It really does. It really does. And, you know, I mean, it looks like it when you pull our roster up. I mean, if Scott Patchen would have come back, we would have had almost as many Al Golden guys as Mark Richt guys.
Hey, when Scott Patchen comes back.
He will be back next season.
Yes.
For another year. Dude, why didn't we get him back? The Mountain West isn't even playing.
What do they call it in college when you come back for like a fifth or sixth year victory lap?
We could have Scott Patchen for two more seasons, man. I really think that is like an underrated subplot.
Isn't this his sixth season?
Yes. And I think we need him to go for seven or eight with us.
What's he proving? What's he proving?
It doesn't matter. I mean, we need the experience, man.
Just go to BYU. He should have just gone to BYU at this point.
We need an Al Golden guy. You know?
We need an Al Golden guy?
I feel like that's what this team is missing, is a little bit of Al Golden.
Yeah, just a little bit of shit.
Okay, I'm going to call Justin in, but I'm going to pitch that to him right off the back. Right off the bat. Is why don't we get Scott Patchen back for two seasons?
Oh, God.
Okay.
Justin, what's going on, brother?
Oh, man. A lot.
So, yeah, we've only had you on once, and that was back in, like, March or April. But we welcome on my good friend, our good friend, Justin, from my fellow writer at State of the U. He is the film guru. He's a nerd.
Wow.
How you doing, man? What's been going on? I know you just moved. What's happening?
Yep, I was hanging some curtains, which is probably the worst thing on earth to do when you don't know how to do it. And so I don't know how to do anything. So it was kind of a pain. That wasn't fun. And then I ran up here and realized in my one-armedness of having an injured arm that I had forgotten things because I can't use two hands. And then I ran back down. I ran back up. And for some reason, the headphones weren't working, and now they are. And here we are.
Cool. Well, I had something I wanted to pitch to you right real quick.
Oh, God.
Hopefully it's better Wi-Fi.
Here's what I'm saying is the Mountain West Conference isn't playing this season, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we get Scott Patchen back? Because we could have two more years of him.
Oh, God. I don't want to crap on the guy.
We could be in 2021 and still have an Al Golden player on our roster.
Oh, wow. Is that true? He was an Al Golden player?
Al Golden guy.
Good Lord. So he's perfect for BYU.
Exactly. Yeah, right? That's exactly what I was saying.
Yeah. He's a young gent for the
Cougs. Yeah.
It's a requisite that, especially if you play for the BYU basketball team, you have to have a bald spot and a child, or else you can't play BYU basketball.
Okay, I gotta ask you, Justin, what's this sudden fascination with Utah high school football?
I would say, so one day it was like the only game on, right? Weren't they like the first game? Yeah. And so I was like, you know what? They're going to be the first game I'm going to watch, just out of sheer boredom, right?
Yeah.
And I threw it on. I wake up really early in the morning every day, but also Saturday and Sunday. And so I'm the only person up, kind of a thing, right? Like, besides Marsh being up all day. Other than that, you know, pulling a Batman. Other than that, you know, I'm up. And so it's like, well, what am I going to do at 6:30 in the morning? There's nothing else to do. I can't, you know, especially when I had one, you know, I really couldn't do anything with my left arm. So it was like, well, I'm going to watch this thing. And then you notice, you're like, man, these are big kids that play really good football. I appreciated, and this is going to sound odd, but as like a teacher administrator type, I appreciated that people were following the social distance rules. And then when they weren't, the AD came on the field, made them all split up, waited, then started play again. So you're like, all right, I can also get down with that. So, you know, I don't know. It's good football, man. I haven't seen a bad game on there, even in a blowout. Like, there was one I was watching. Oh, man. We were even on vacation at the beach, like right before really getting into this move and everything. It was like, all right, you know, my wife's cousin came down and stuff. She's the one who actually introduced us. She and I are like really, really good friends. And I got up early and watched some K-Jizz, greatest name of anything of all time, high school football.
It's K-Jazz.
No, it's Jizz. And especially when it's all white, you kind of can really get down into it's K-Jizz. Oh. So I talked about K-Jizz, just smearing it on my bagel in the morning and having a little K-Jizz smear and some coffee. And there's nothing like watching the game. I mean, I watched one out in the I think I sent that picture to you, but I watched one out in the little deck area we've got now where I just have my laptop out there, watch a little K-Jizz action and enjoy some good football. I mean, and the cool thing so far is I think I've seen like four different offenses. So you've got a straight up, somebody was just slinging 10 personnel air raid. Your boys from East ran Flexbone.
Triple option, baby.
Somebody else ran old school I. Maybe it was, is it Binghamton? Is that the right name?
Bingham?
I think Binghamton might be in New York. See, my geography skills are, you know, subpar. Bingham might have ran the eye. Like, you're just seeing a little bit of everything. Then you saw kind of more like a pistol spread, sort of grinded out. They had some diamond from somebody else. So it was pretty cool. I don't know. I've really enjoyed it. The announcers, I usually mute every announcer. I don't listen to a damn thing anybody says. And I listen to music usually. But I actually enjoy – I think it's the Thursday night guys are better than the Friday night guys. But the Thursday night guys are really good. And it's good that they're all former, like – coaches, but they're all also, sure, you're a coach, but like Mac Brown, like as much as I think he's a good coach, or at least a good CEO, he was a really boring analyst, right? Like in any capacity of that, he was like a snoozer. But the guys that are on there are really good. You know, they're pretty in tune with what's going on. They don't mix up the play action RPO thing at all. I don't know. It's been really enjoyable. So it's been my thing. It's like my niche market of athletics. Normally I would watch like a, you know, D3 game or something as my niche market, but it's KJ's, man.
Hey, I mean, yeah. I saw that my alma mater, Old East High, gave up 69 points last week, so I was kind of shocked when I saw that. That was
they were not playing defense, but they were playing really good offense.
But the thing is, like, you can't fall. The same thing happened with Navy last night. You can't fall behind and expect to mount a comeback in a triple option.
Yeah, you can't, but I think and I don't know anything about East, obviously. I'm starting to know the teams a little bit, but and another good thing is I've seen like one, I think I saw Temp View twice, but other than that, I've seen like all new teams each time. So I'm also not getting repeats, which is good, but also I don't really know them that well. But I think, you know, that's a good point. I think when you don't have the same level of talent, let's say, or if you have a coach that's like, look, I'm here for the long haul. Like, I'm not a guy looking to go from East and like jump over to West. Is there a West? I don't know. But you know what I mean? Like, oh, East is just East. You know, I want to go over to West High when they get that job. You know, you can't do that running the flex bone. I'm going to have to go spread. Like, there's a lot of guys who think that way. I mean, run what you know best and fits the kids the best. So if you can fit the young man, I shouldn't call him kids because, you know, in Helen, Oregon, they'll try a 14-year-old as an adult. So he's a grown man at 14, right? Because any age of which you can be tried as an adult, you might as well just cut the crap and stop calling them children. But I think when you say that you're, you know, you want to fit the young men properly into what you do, which can be variable. Like, you know, maybe they don't have so much of an option quarterback 1 year, so they're a little bit more of a wing T look out of it. And then the next time you do have an option quarterback, you go back to being more midline triple. I don't know. I mean, I think you run what you run. They scored a ton of points out of it. You can't say they weren't moving the ball. They just weren't going to score 69 points.
Yeah. I mean,
whoever they played was just throwing it, man. That was a good team, though.
I think a few years after I graduated, we got our new head coach when I was a sophomore in high school, and he's still there. And there's a few years where East was finishing in the top five in the nation. And I mean, they got some good players. I know one of our one of the offensive linemen, starting offensive linemen for Texas, came from East. But enough of Utah high school football.
We need a special episode where I'm down to watch a game and just shoot the shit during it. But you know,
yeah,
we'll get to real topics. I'm sorry.
Finishing just has me ready to move on.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
East High, but I am very excited to do this, because every week we're gonna bring you on and talk about the Canes' upcoming opponent. And I know that you know a hell of a lot more than I do when it comes to X's and O's. So let me ask you, man, are you excited for Thursday night? I know you're an even keel guy when it comes to the Canes. I know you and I have talked about that, but how are you feeling? Are you juiced? Are you pumped? Do you want to, you know, buckle up the chin straps? How the hell are you feeling, man?
I'm looking at Sebastian. I've got the Orange Bowl little thing my parents gave me underneath him. I'm sitting, leaning up against the Miami pillow. There's a Miami blanket. There's a Jesse Armstead Hurricanes jersey that I got in 1992 from probably, where would you get a jersey back then? Sears, you know, like sitting behind me. It is it's definitely got the long sleeves. I want to say it's Russell Athletic. I also have an Adjuran James Colts jersey behind me and a Hurricane sleeveless weird jersey thing that randomly someone got me. So it was like a college girlfriend or something. So I'm here, man. I mean, obviously I'm fired up for it. I would tell you that when I started to do the season preview stuff, I was like, oh man, you know, like I almost even had a little inkling of the feeling you get where it's like Thursday night before a game and you're like, all right, the walkthrough is over. I'm going to lay here and try to forget that we have a game tomorrow. And that's like, well, I can't do that. So now I'm stuck like thinking about it all night, you know, like it was sort of that feeling. Like I felt like I wish I had something to do with football right now besides, you know, watch it. But I sort of don't. So here we are. But I'm excited, man. I think I watched the UAB. Well, I fell asleep during UAB and who the hell they play? Central Arkansas?
Yep.
Yeah. I watched that one and, you know, the UAB didn't look that good. But I think they're a well-coached team. They're actually, they are a program. Like as much as Alabama tried to get rid of them and did a good job for a hot minute, you know, for 18 months or whatever, they couldn't kill him. Bill Clark, man, it's a funny situation. Like you hear stuff where it's like, well, Bill Clark would be at UAB forever. And people aren't even going to like go after him that much. You know, there's no jobs that like market for him in a way because they don't think he'll ever leave. Like, why didn't he leave when it closed? There were other openings. People would have taken him. He was doing a good job. And then they came back and they got some benefits because they were allowed to oversign and some stuff like that. And they went pretty hard JUCO and things like that. But I think they almost even got like first dibs on some JUCO guys and stuff, but you know, they were allowed a little bit of leeway with transferring and stuff, but you know, I mean, he was successful 2 years in a row after being annihilated, like literally like killed off. So he bounces back better than most, you know, and I think they're going to be good. You know, they're bringing pressure on defense. Offensively, they just looked kind of meh. So if Diaz and Baker are worth what everyone claims they're worth, Bruce Feldman sticking Blake Baker in his top, was he like number 14 coordinators in the country? Like what Shut the hell up. Is Feldman doing these days?
No, he did not.
I want to know, how do you do that? Like, how do you do that the season after? I mean, it was his first season here, and Manny had to like re-involve himself in the defense.
I don't know.
You know, that's horribly. Like how that doesn't make sense to me.
And why didn't he go? And Feldman is a Miami homer. We all know that. But yeah. Why wouldn't you just say Lashley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
your top 15 coordinators in the whole freaking country. I'm pretty sure that's what that list was. And it, and you know, I don't really, you know, I'm pretty sure. And you put Blake Dam Baker on there? I mean, hell, put the Packy Joker on there already. I mean, what's the difference at that point? And the thing is, I know that the defense played, you know, well analytically in a sense. They also played like no offense, maybe two or three offenses above like 80 at, you know, out of 130. Yeah. So yeah, when you're looking at SP plus. So I mean, was the defense as good as they just played also bad offenses, just like the one that they rolled out on the field last year? So, you know, it was like Dan Enos playing. Baker was just coaching against Dan Enos every damn week. Well, hell, anybody can stop that. Ask Central Michigan.
Well, and he needed his handheld too, you know? Like, I know he kept calling the plays, but, I mean, Manny had to reassert himself in the game planning and the, you know, the weekly prep and stuff like that. Like, I have a hard time decorating a guy after he had to get the training wheels put back on halfway through the year.
Correct. I 100% agree with you. And, you know, it's funny. You know, you go around the World Wide Web, right, Sandra Bullock's net, and you look around, and you're like, oh, what are people, like, griping about? You know, I kind of, like, I almost write my stuff on what are people either really excited about, let me squash it to be a heel, because I'm a heel, right? You know, in wrestling terminology, you know, in kayfabe, I'm a heel. I mean, I am definitely a real-life heel, as well as my character of Iron Man Football Blog is a heel, right? I am the contrarian. I'm a heel. I'm going to talk a little trash, you know, try to back it up. I don't really do the chicken shit heel thing as much as some guys did back in the day, like Ric Flair with, you know, on his hands and knees begging and hit you in the nuts. That's not really my gimmick, but just kind of a heel, you know, all around bad guy. And my shtick or you know, I don't know, now I'm kind of losing the track here, but my mentality of this thing is I'm surprised when I read on the internet how many people, and I think they're right, are like, what the hell is going on with the linebacker position? Then you look at it in your brain and you go, well, shit, the head coach, the defensive coordinator, and the special teams coordinator are all linebacker coaches. How is Bradley Jennings Jr. starting at Miami with Zach McLeod? McLeod, who couldn't find his own, you know, couldn't find his ass with two hands. And Jennings hadn't, hell, has the guy ever got a damn snap?
Well, let me cut you off real quick because
he's Mark Richt's boy.
You are preaching to the choir for Jordan because, I mean, all offseason, him and I have, you know, we've worried a little bit about these linebackers. And I, you know, when we interviewed Zach McLeod for the media shit, whatever, a few weeks ago, you know, he was high on Bradley Jennings, but I never thought he was going to start. I mean, we want to go to a more athletic defense. So why not start a guy like Sam Brooks or Avery Huff? Like, I feel like they fit that mold much better than Bradley Jennings. I don't know. Were there any other depth chart surprises to you?
Well, let me hang on that one for a minute.
Go ahead. Cause
I've coached linebackers for a long time. Like, I don't know how many years I've been coaching. 18. I've probably coached linebackers like shit, a dozen years. And now I'm not a damn college linebacker coach by any means, not even at, you know, D3 slapdick state, but I'm done a lot of coaching damn linebackers. And I was around a guy who taught me how to coach linebackers, who had coached at Syracuse under Dick McPherson. And he was around Pasqualoni, O'Leary, Tressel, Scott Pioli, Clarence Brooks, George DeLeon. God, there's more guys on that list I can't even think of, but almost every coach that was in that staff at that time period is a name. Like, if you don't know George DeLeon, he was an NFL offensive line coach for like 20 something years, Chargers and some other places. You know, is pretty much a zone guy, but they were the guys behind, you know, Donovan McNabb. They're the guys behind, you know, there is a Rob Conrad, like all these years of really good football players, you know, and, you know, the guy who groomed me was around all those guys. Scott Pioli's got how many rings from being with the Patriots, you know, 3 rings or something like that. I mean, these guys were, that's who was kind of grooming me, was this guy who coached at Syracuse at VMI at West Point. And then he got into the high school game. Cause it's more, pretty honest with you, there's a retirement. It's more stable. But you know, if you're trying to tell me this defense is too complicated for the young guys to understand, then how did you do it with Quarterman and Pinckney, who don't look like they have any football IQ after 4 years and were true freshmen when they started?
Yeah.
So it can't be a complications thing, right? Yeah. It's not too complicated. because those guys couldn't ever figure out coverage. They never knew how to blitz properly. God knows they overran every single play and got burned. So, and I, what I mean by burned is like a guy just shot right through their gap and they just got destroyed. Half the time they never even disengaged from a line, from an offensive lineman. So they were both pretty much, in all honesty, they didn't really grow much from like their sophomore year on. Senior year was kind of hot garbage for both of those guys, obviously in the standings, but also like their play sucked. I don't even think Pinckney's gotten on with anybody. I'm not shocked either. I mean, he always seemed like he just gave a damn more about partying and playing. But, you know, another guy, then that's a Manny Diaz player, right? Well, sort of a golden player, but, you know, Manny Diaz agreed to keep him and brought him on and started him for four damn years. So it's not complications because that damn defense is really easy. Blitz, 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 get burned. Like, you know, it worked, it worked, it worked. Oh, shit, it worked, it worked, it worked, oh, shit. So I don't think it's a complications thing. I mean, are they rewarding – do they think this is a walkthrough game and they're just rewarding a hardworking kid? That's cool, you know, but these are, you know, again, I just say kid, but these are grown men.
Yeah.
The minute that you hit, you know, that age and you're in college, we don't really, you really don't do that anymore. Hell, I barely do it with high school. You know, I don't really, you know, you get rewarded with a damn t-shirt if you work hard in the weight room, but if you can't play ball, you can't play ball. Like,
yeah.
If you're a cancer, I get rid of you. So where are we? You know, like I maybe he's that damn good. Man, McLeod and Jennings Jr., your two linebackers, and you have three head coach and two coordinators as a linebacker coach. But depth chart surprises.
Yeah.
I wasn't shocked anywhere else. Were you?
Well, I'd like to interject right there on you know, point out about the linebackers. Because I think me and you have a you know, a common idea here, and you know, I can certainly relate to the heel thing because I always like to squash common narratives that I think are stupid too, and one of them that I've been going at all off season was how everyone said our linebackers are going to be so much better this year, and you know, I don't profess to be a huge X's and O's guy, so I understand that, you know, maybe I might not understand how schematically there's going to be so much better of a fit. You know, but there's not a ton of logic in the idea. Well, Zach McLeod was the odd man out. You know, most people are like, well, our linebacker is going to be better because last year, Shaq and Pinckney, they kind of sucked. You know, they didn't have their best year here at Miami. It certainly wasn't their strongest performance. And I'm like, well, how is Zach McLeod an upgrade? Because he got benched the whole time. He was always the odd man out of that group. You know, every single season, he was considered the weak link. And then, I mean, we're, like you said, Bradley Jennings, a guy with no experience. It was either him or freshman or, you know, Sam Brooks is a sophomore. But, like, I'm not buying the narrative at all that we are upgrading at linebacker. It honestly feels, I mean, it's the position that we've recruited the worst since Manny got here on defense. And I just don't see it, man. I don't want to crap on these kids. But at the same time, I just don't have really high expectations for our linebacking group.
Yeah, I really try not to pick on the players. You know what I mean? Like, I'll crap all over the coaches, but I try not to pick on the players. They don't get paid. If you think their scholarship, blah, 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 counts as a salary or whatever, I mean, it does, according to the IRS. If you looked at IRS law, which was what my thesis, master's thesis was on, was are Division I football players actually employees of the school? They are. But in that aspect, what I was trying to prove was that they should be paid real money. But if you look at the IRS and you look at things like meals, per diems, insurance coverage, which they all get extra insurance coverage or some at all, you know, they all get obviously room and board. There is, you know, tuition reimbursement. All those things in the IRS are counted. So they are employees of the school. They're just not paid. They should be paid a hell of a lot more than they are because I don't know why – X coach makes $9 million and the players make $40 a weekend. Like, that doesn't make any sense. But you know, if you look at the NFL, most of the players make more than the damn coach. So, and I get maybe you don't want to go there with it, but you should probably give Johnny Manziel his jersey money. When you type in Johnny Manziel, it pops up with the number 2 Texas A&M jersey on the NCAA website. Johnny, that's football. The biggest. That was the biggest turd fest of all time. Was that they tried to say they weren't doing that. And then you type in Johnny Manziel and his jersey number and jersey shows up online. That was the number. That was the moment they should have just stopped trying this and should have said, all right, fine. We'll pay you for likeness, just like the Olympics. But, you know, and you can get little sponsorships and things like that. But, you know, my question is to everybody, I think I posed this last time I was on, but my question is, why the hell does everybody show up in Miami and get slower? I thought this was supposed to be speed place, and you can practice outside every day, and now we have an indoor facility. Why the hell is the strength and conditioning program so bad?
On that offense, we get faster, but
guys get slower. I don't know. You think DJ Dallas ever got faster? You felt like Jeff Thomas's 20-mile-per-hour bullshit was ever real? Because I never saw him do it in a damn game. So either your visual cognitive ability to tie into your motor skill is so weak because you're not developing, you know, sports specific things. And what I mean by sports specific isn't that in the weight room there's nothing sports specific. That's a total like bullshit thing that people like me tell kids because they say my basketball coach thinks you're gonna mess up my shot. Like LeBron James isn't jacked to the freaking gills. Like his shot got messed up because he lifted weights. Bullshit. But we tell kids this is a basketball workout, and it's hilarious because it's the same workout the fucking volleyball team just did. Just like it's gonna be the same one the lacrosse team is about to do. There is no difference in that shit. It's totally not true. There is no sports specific. You want to get sports specific? You coach in the softball team, take a softball, stick it in the ground, and when they're doing a one-legged squat, they stare at that. That's the closest thing you're gonna get to sports specific training. It's not real. Now, do we do? I don't do. You know, all unilaterals, bilateral, all that stuff is the same. Do I might do some arm prehab stuff for pitchers? Yeah, sure. Quarterback, sure. But other than that, that's not sports specific. It's really just use specific. But I mean, everybody should be doing rotator cuff shit. You don't want to tear, you know, anything up in your shoulder. So anyway, that doesn't exist. So what I mean by sports specific is when you go out in the field, are you actually doing things that matter, like the quote unquote speed ladder, agility ladder? You might as well take it to the back and set it on fire, right? That thing doesn't do anything. It's a great way to warm up, and after a warm up, throw it out. You're not gonna get faster chopping in place. That's literally impossible. You don't get faster running in sand. Do some research. Think about the way that our body presses and against the ground.
Wait, we always post videos of us running in sand though.
You have a shitty S&C coordinator. Feeling must suck.
My Instagram profile is me running on the beach.
Just you. Oh, it's you running on the beach. I thought you meant the players.
You should see how fast I am now. No,
yeah. You don't get faster by running on the sand. That's not real. You don't get mentally tougher by running 300s. That's not real. You know, if you are mentally – because I had a lot of guys, and I can think of a few offhand that I would never mention my name, obviously, because that's a douche move. But I can think of a few particular guys I've coached who were the mentally weakest and just horrible teammates, who could do 300s, 110s, up, downs, and burpees. They could still be doing them now, and I haven't coached them in 7 years. Like, they would need, like, a water break every 3 hours. They were those guys. They could physically do anything. They were the mentally weakest. I mean, a few of them are in jail, right? And some of them are in prison.
Ish.
But they are the men. But that, does that – oh, they were mentally tough. No, they're not. They're in damn incarceration. And the recidivism rate is 67 to 70%, so they'll be back there again. Don't worry. It happens. For a lot of reasons, not always the person's fault per se, but a lot of reasons, right? So I don't believe in that. That's total bullshit. So there's guys online that played at Miami in 1991 or whatever that I don't know if you think anybody in particular who are always like, this is where you cut your mental toughness. Like, nope, that's not true. You didn't get any mentally tougher. You either had it or you didn't. That's not real. The minute somebody turns their back, you stop doing it, then you're weak. And if you do it because you're going to do it, you're strong. And there's not a whole lot that can change. Like, we need to put you in situations that, sure, situational competitive drill. That's where you look at Bondarchuk's four levels of being able to develop an athlete. There's general prep, and then you get into some sports-specific stuff, and then you get into competition. When you're at competition, that's competing. Live tackling in a situational period. Okay, it's you're on the plus five. We're going to run two plays from the plus five. Offense wins. They get steak. Defense just gets hot dogs. Defense wins, they get steak. Offense just gets hot dogs.
So has the defense for Miami just been eating really good the past few years?
I mean, if that's what they do, I don't know what the hell they do. I have a feeling Manny Diaz eats really good. And the other, you know, what do they say in Sopranos? You know, Manny Diaz is eating five-star meals and everyone around him is starving to death. Like, I'm starting to wonder because he enjoyed the yacht and the goddamn kegger, but I can't see where the players are getting any better. I just don't see it. I don't see strength and conditioning at Miami in the last God knows how long making anyone faster. How is it? And you know what's a real fallacy? No, man, you can't coach speed. No, you know you can't coach height. I can't make you any damn taller, right? Bobby Brady and the Brady Bunch tried to hang from the monkey bars. The shit don't work. That's the only thing I can't coach. I can make you thicker. I can get your ass bigger. I can make your legs more solid. I can make you throw harder. Now, can I take you from 40 miles an hour to 80? Probably not, but I can make you 40 to 60 and 60 to 80. You know?
Got me at those first two. Can I send my girlfriend to you?
I can do it. You know, and you know what? She's probably hoping to death that you get sent to me so you can get some ass on you. Yes,
she definitely is.
You know, you guys are from Utah, man. I can't imagine a lot of ass in Utah.
Okay, so Justin, I want to start off by looking by talking about this UAB offense. Now, I watched some film on them this morning, and I'm not crazy about them as a whole. I think their quarterback is a little, you know, up and down. He's a gunslinger and honestly just not that accurate with the ball. They have a good receiver. They got a good running back, a big ass running back. What were your takeaways from UAB's offense, and do you see Miami having success against them on Thursday?
I hope Miami's been tackling more in practice than Navy was, which Navy didn't tackle at all, right? And they look like it because BYU is thick as hell, yeah. Right? BYU comes thick. They like the poly kids. Poly kids are thick, man. It's just a natural occurrence, right? I was watching one of those KJ's games. There was a kid 5'10", 235, who ran like lightning. And it was a big old poly kid. And that's – I hope that Miami's been tackling live a little bit. Now, you don't have to go live every day, but I hope they have, because the UAB running back, like you said, is huge. That Watkins kid is fast. Now, Central Arkansas shut him down. So,
yeah.
I mean, 7 catches for 72 yards is like garbage. I mean, that's nothing. That's what Enos was getting out of Brevin Jordan, right?
That would be a good day for Brevin Jordan.
Yeah.
Former offensive coordinator.
Just nothing, right? So I think if you dedicate yourself to shutting him down, get a little pressure on the quarterback, because neither of the quarterbacks that they played were very good. They were okay. Like, they weren't great. But if you haven't been tackling, and if your S&C's been weak, and, you know, speed is the number one thing, right? And I'm harping on it a lot, obviously, in the last half hour, but speed is the number one thing. If I run faster than you at you and make contact with you, I'm going to win. Right? Like, I feel like that's like, you know, high school physics or some shit. You know, the train from Georgia gets there faster than the train from whatever because it travels faster. Like, no shit, right? So I think if you run me, right, at 235, and I run let's say a 4.6, and dude is 235 and runs a 4.9, I'm going to run through his ass. Now, I mean, you know, the next thing comes testicular fortitude, as Mick Foley used to say. You know, you have to be willing to get in there and make the play. But a lot of tackling is funny. A lot of tackling is really speed. Can you get there to make the play? Are you in position to do it? And confidence. Do you believe that you can actually do it? So it's clarity, confidence, conviction. Is the assignment and the alignment clear? Right? So it's align, assign, and execute. Is the alignment and assignment clear? Do you have the confidence that you can do it? Do you have the conviction to finish the damn tackle? CCC, clarity, confidence, conviction. You know, that's on my damn resume. Like, that's something I believe firmly in, clarity, confidence, conviction. So, you know, do you have that? So with tackling, it's really, you know, confidence and then conviction. You know, do you believe that you can make the tackle and then you can go and do it? When guys, you see them, like Navy's number 7, the striker, you know, last night, he was like ducking out of the way a little bit. Ooh, that's no clarity, confidence, conviction, buddy. Your first lumps, though, were against big-ass BYU 25-year-old men, right? And you might be 19, and you're a skinny little joker because you're at Navy, and they kind of make them skinny because it's just between PT and whatnot, you know, and the type of athlete that they recruit. So, yeah, you know, I personally, if I'm Bradley Jennings Jr., my first live action, you know, is going to be against that running back, I hope he's got testicular fortitude, because I've never had the chance to see it because I've never seen a damn guy play. But, you know, I hope Ryan Ragone doesn't have to go in there, because we're in bad shape as fans if we've got to see a guy who looks like me playing in a you know, P5 football game.
Man, I mean, you are just sounding kind of depressing talking about our defense. I mean, I'm not
that all the time. Why am I always depressed?
I'm not overly stoked about our linebackers. I will say that. Jordan and I have talked about this many times. I don't think we're going into the season saying, oh yes, we got Zach McLeod as our linebacker. When you look at UAB, do you think because of the strength of our DNs, do you think we're going to see a lot of runs up the middle, you know, pound the middle against Nesta and John Ford?
I mean, I think you should, right? Like, the last thing I'm trying to do is drop back forever against Roche, who's 230 pounds, right? Like, I'm not going to do that. If I'm doing anything, I'm running right at his ass, and I'm just going to come at him all night. I'm going to prove whether the tackles for loss against, you know, Tulane and Sister Mary Catherine were all they were, or if they were actually real legitimate tackles for loss. I mean, I talked to a friend of mine who's an ACC coach, and he was saying, you know, that kid's an NFL draft pick, but not the first round or other people are saying. Like, he's good. He's really good, but he's not great, right? So, you know, he's definitely a damn great pass rusher. But when it comes to, you know, setting the edge, the POA, point of attack, like, can he actually, you know, handle his weight at the point of attack? It's going to be hard when you're that slender and they're asking you to play DN. Now, if you know, Miami was a 34 team and he was a rush guy on the end, it would be different, you know, but he's not. You know, he's asked to put his hand down and be a you know, a five technique or a seven or nine, or, you know, depending on whatever stupid numbering you use. You know, and I think that's the guy I would run at him all night. I would take my H and my right tackle, and I would beat the living shit out of him all night. I would cut him. I would slam him on the ground. I would double him. I mean, you saw that UAB tight end just manhandling dudes. Now, of course, at Central Arkansas, but still, he's obviously got testicular fortitude. Will you? You know, I would pound. I'd trap that guy. I'd run split zone, and I'd have the H kick come right at him. I would beat the crap out of him, and then basically on third long, say, I dare you to keep coming up field. He's gonna be gassed. I'd blow him up, man. I would kill him all night. When I threw, I would make sure the guy's there to chip his ass, though. I'm not going to, you know, I would throw the screen away from him. A guy like him is going to jump up and pick it off and take it to the house. You know, it's like Darren Crine stuff. I'm not throwing the screen at him, you know, Penn State. What are you doing? I'm throwing away from him. And it, when I drop back, I'm going to make sure two dudes are on him. But I'm also going to make sure two dudes are on him in a run game. Like, I'm going to beat the crap out of him and let some guy that hasn't played a snap in 3 years or whatever try to beat me. Of course, I'll let the Phillips guy run himself to death.
Well, I'm not going into this game thinking UAB is going to put up a ton of points. I don't like their quarterback. I like their running back, but I don't think that he alone can, you know, bring UAB close to a victory. I do like Watkins, but when your quarterback is that inaccurate and that you know, up and down, it's hard. I don't see our defense having a big problem against the Blazers. Now, I will say, and a lot of people are giving me shit for this, I see the offense, the Canes offense, Rhett Lashley, Derek King, I see them struggling a little bit, at least in the first half. I mean, people they're not realizing and they're forgetting that first game, you're always going to be a little sloppy. I mean, and this is your first game in a new offensive scheme. It's not going to be crystal clear. I see people projecting 50, 55 points, 60 points for the Canes, and it's crazy to me. Well, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm with you. 35-12 or some weird numbers like that, like 35-10. I think people, because most people are used to playing Madden, right? And they've never had to be in a situation where, and it's hard for people sometimes to like relate these things together, like to say, okay, so let's say that you work at Dave's Widgets, right? And you're building a bunch of shit and you lose your, you lose your number one truck driver, like your delivery dude, right? He knows how to drive the 18 wheeler. He knows how to back it into your alley. He knows how to back it right up against your, you know, loading bay. He knows how to jump out and get on the guys in the dock and get them to load that shit up and then to jump back in and drive it out, listen to Eddie Rabbit and fucking driving his life away on the way out, right? He knows how to do all that. And you forget, though, the number – like one of the hardest jobs to replace in the entire world is a really good truck driver, People don't realize that. Well, it's the same thing. They have a hard time saying, oh, yeah, my job, that truck driver, he does a hell of a job, doesn't he? They have a hard time saying, oh, that's how a right tackle works, or that's how, you know, the running back works. Like, DJ Dallas, you think it's that easy to replace him? I mean, I was his, like, number one fan. I'm not willing to admit that I was super high on everything he did, from he was willing to gain weight for that program and lose weight for that program and block his ass off and catch balls and run between the tackles. And I mean, I was a huge fan of everything he did, both character and culture-wise and physically, right? Like, I was a huge fan of what he did out there. I think he sticks in the NFL for 5 years. You know, I think he's going to overcome. He hit the DNA lottery because anyone in the NFL did. But there are different levels of the DNA lottery. There's the baseline DNA lottery, and then there's Saquon Barkley, right? You know, he's no Saquon Barkley. But I think he sticks around for a while in the NFL because he's willing to do whatever the hell it takes. And that's the difference, is work ethic, character, culture. You know, I was kind of surprised he wasn't a Patriot or somebody like that, because he's willing to do whatever, or maybe even a Dolphin, because that's basically Patriots Junior at this point, right? I was surprised.
I don't know about that.
I think Flores would love to win 52 Super Bowls or whatever Belichick's won. I think everyone wants to be the Patriots. It's just some people don't understand how to do it, right? So I don't know. I just think that I think it's hard to replace those guys. You know, you think you can do it in Madden, obviously, with a snap of a finger, right? But in real life, if you look at how do you relate what you do, it's really hard to replace certain people. You know, like you think you can plug and play it, and really it's not talent. That's the thing. People always talk about talent. No, it's the best fit. It's not the most talented fit. That's not what works in real life.
Oh, that's gospel right there.
Yeah, it's the best fit. You go read the program by Cap and Mac. You go read the program. They put that out. It says military strategy. But it's also corporate strategy. And what those guys talk about is best versus most talented. And the best fit fits your core values and your culture of your institution. Insert institution here. That could be Dave's Widgets. That could be University of Miami Football. That could be, you know, whatever the hell KJ's high school announced team. That could be whatever it is, right? But you have guys and gals that work together really well. And I think, you know, it's hard to replace that. I don't think it's as easy as people think. I think King has said all the right things. I loved him at Houston. I was thrilled he came. Like,
awesome, dude.
I love the idea of Lashley.
Every interview that we do, you know, for State of the Union, for the media, every single person talks about D.R. King. And it's not just his skill set, but it's like his leadership. And I'm like, oh my God, this is what this feels like.
Yeah, he gets it. He knows. And you know what?
Exactly. He gets it.
He knows how to talk to the media. And isn't he from Texas?
Yes.
Yeah. So he's used to doing it even from high school, because they have big time media there. So, you know, a little bit of what happens to some of these, you know, Florida guys is there really big time Florida media when it comes to high school reporting? No, like there really isn't. Not compared to Texas. Somebody's going to be so pissed off.
Texas is a different level.
Yeah, somebody's going to tell me Manny Navarro used to pick against Southridge and lose every week, which I'm pretty sure is true. And you know, they're going to tell me that back in 1996, right? And I'm going to say, okay, so Manny Navarro is your one guy. But, you know, and I don't even like the work he does. But, you know, it's very cliche work. Like, oh, the team hit at Wendy's last night. Like, great. Good for you. Do you know what the hell is even going on the field? Or are you just a damn puppet of what the hell is? Because you share names.
He's an alumni of the show.
I'm allowed to shit on whoever I want. That's part of being a heel.
That's
part of being a heel.
So I wanted to get more of your guys' thoughts on the depth chart. Jordan, I know you, you know, we talked a little before Justin came on. Did you have any more thoughts or surprises from the depth chart for the UAB game?
You know, I guess more than a surprise, I was very happy to see that Mark Pope won a starting job. I'm really happy for him. Cause you know, I'm very well documented as, you know, just being like, why are we celebrating Mark Pope? He hasn't done anything ever. But, you know, winning the starting job is a big deal. And you know, I'm really hoping – and plus he's listed as our starting kick and punt returner. So I'm hoping this is his year to break out. We certainly all know how physically gifted he is. So maybe this
is a 5-star.
He was a 5-star. I've been told by everyone with a Twitter account. I'm very happy for him. Very, very happy. I was surprised to see, I talked a lot about our youth. And then I'm trying to think if there was anything else that really stood out.
I got one.
Okay, go ahead.
Bubba Bolden is not starting.
Oh yeah.
He's the best. He's like one of the best players, all around players on that team.
Yeah.
I mean, and no disrespect to Amari. I think Amari's a headhunter and just will knock your block off. But in my opinion, Bubba is the best safety that Miami has had in some time, and he's healthy. And so maybe he's still rehabbing a little bit, but I don't know. Justin, did that surprise you?
Maybe they're punishing him for being a hip bump guy. I'm not a hip bump guy. If you bump hips, I'm out. I'm out on you. And if you blow up your knee, jump up and hip bump. The two guys who jump up and the worst one is when the coach does it to a player. If you ever see a coach hip bump a player, you might as well call the guy a dumbass. Like, he's the worst coach of all time. No coach should ever bump hips with a player, like in midair, like at some Saved by the Bell, or like maybe it's even worse, it's Maverick and Goose volleyball scene. They're like oiled up and they just jump up and like two hips collide as they celebrate. That's the worst. Slapping asses is all right. Hip bumping is just, you should never as a coach jump in the air. First of all, just embarrassing, but Manny Diaz wears cleats. That's the most embarrassing thing in the world. But you should never.
Really.
No one should ever. Oh, geez,
shut
it's
up.
The douchiest
no,
thing
not.
On earth. Yes, he does. He wears cleats. He's a cleat guy. That's the worst thing in the world. The second worst thing is the guy that has like the backpack on all game. Shit, I bring a backpack to practice. I bring a backpack to the game. You got to have your water bottle. I never shared the water with anybody. I was COVID before COVID existed. You have your own chapstick. You need some gloves, maybe. It gets cold, right? And I don't mean gloves like a fucking pair of goddamn gloves you hit batting cages with. I mean actual damn isotoners, damn Marino. Like the guys Manny also wears the gloves, like a receiver's gloves. It's lame. Like it's lame, dude. You're lame. Like it's all right. I mean, not everybody's got like any coolness to him. I mean, there's some people are just lame, but yeah, maybe they're just sour on him. Some guys I know don't really like Banda very much. I'm not going to name names of who said that obviously, but they didn't, they met him at different stuff. They don't really like him very much. They think he's kind of a slap dick. Who doesn't know what the hell he's doing. The attention to details piss poor back there. I don't know if it could get any worse. I mean, shit, I heard from some guys about the DJ Ivy thing with the punt was like, the Georgia Tech touchdown. I've never let that go because it's embarrassing. But, that was happening all year, and nobody realized it except for Tech. Ugh. Like, they were like, oh, they never cover a guy inside the, in a short field punt. Oh, we're just going to throw it deep over their head. Like, that's a constant thing. Like, that's a constant lack of attention to detail. I've heard it's really piss poor. But they got shitloads of talent. I mean, everybody back there is a damn 4- and 5-star, and but you know what Hal Mumma used to say, your potential is going to get me fired, right? If you never actually turn your potential into production, what are you? So maybe the Bolden kid's not a whole lot. Here's the thing about transferring. For every guy that's a Joe Burrow in a field, there are 300 guys you've never heard of, right? That transfer and you disappear and you're like, oh, damn, you remember that guy?
Like Tate Martell?
Oh, yeah. Tate Martell, your nephew, or Brian Forte, for some of these old farts who are listening that are as old as I am or maybe even a little older. Or, there's just guys that transfer and they're like, oh, yeah, like you came here. The cat that played D-tackle from UCLA, like people were going crazy. It's like, dude, you're getting a lineman from the worst defensive school in the world. That's like saying you're about to bring in the geniuses from a place to engineer your water supply from a place that has like cholera. Like I don't really want, some third world country's engineer like creating the water supply. Like he didn't know what he was doing, right? I want somebody from a place that was shitty and got the good water. How do I get them in? No, you got in a guy that had bad water. He didn't know what to do. Like, and he never did anything. I don't even remember him playing. Like he's another guy that like, maybe I had too many beers during the game. I don't recall him ever being in and making a play. Like, yeah, oh, he was in on 17 snaps all season.
The same with Trayvon Hill, dude.
That's an attitude, effort, attention problem.
Bro, when he came from Virginia Tech, I was like, all right, like, this is it. Like, we got a first-round guy at D-end, and he had, like, two sacks.
And that's another thing. I think he's a talented fella. I just don't think he was the best person. How many goddamn people with problems can you bring into one locker room before you go, ah, shit, that was bad decision, right? Like, you can – so there's an old theory. Like, on a team, you can have four or five guys who might potentially wind up incarcerated on a team, right? At a high school team out of like 50. But you can't have four or five guys who won't, or you're going to wind up in a lot of trouble, right? You know, you got a couple guys that are a little bit like bar fight cats. You're like, good, I need four or five bar fight guys. But you cannot spend 90% of your time on 10% of your people. When you flip the script and you're spending 10% of your time on 90% of the damn headaches, Tate Martell, even some prima donna shit, but Thomas Hill, you know, some guys that maybe weren't as invested into the program. That's why you don't call it a team, Manny Diaz. You call it a program for a reason, because you're setting the tone of culture that is perpetuating from season to season. You want the culture and the core values, the mission, vision, and purpose of your program to exist. It perpetuates. But when you don't do that and you just call them all, well, our team, well, I think that's a bad word. And that might be harping on semantics, but sometimes semantics mean something. And so just like when I called them kids and I corrected myself and said, no, they're men, I think that's something that though starts to get ingrained. I don't call them boys and girls. They're young men and young women, right? They're men and women. They're not boys. They're men. They're not girls. They're women, right? Because I want you to act like an adult. Thus, I must talk to you like an adult. I must label you as an adult, right? Because you'll only be you will only believe you are what I tell you that you are. And so my personal purpose, you know, in life is to get you to believe in you so you can believe in yourself, right? If I believe in you, you'll believe in you. But if I don't, I'm just another long line of damn adult assholes who doesn't believe in some, you know, person.
And you and I have talked a lot about that subject throughout this offseason. You know, after the horrendous shit show that was the 2019 season, I dug into you know, the what makes the culture of a team and everything like that, and you are my go-to guy. So one of my last questions for you is this the year where things start to turn around? I'm not saying that we go 10-1. I'm not saying that we go 11-0, because I think we go either 8-3 and at best 9-2. But do you think this is the season where things start to turn around for the Canes? And I want Jordan's answer too, because my answer changes probably like every week.
Jordan, go first.
I mean, Marsh, I'm kind of with you that I changed like three times a day.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say at least temporarily. I don't want to say that it's going to be more than 2017, because 2017 looks like an outlier if you were to plot all of our seasons, you know, like data. I think this could be an outlier year. I'm not ready to say that this is a turning of the tide, but I think at worst it's going to be an outlier year. I think we're going to have a good record, like 9-2, 8-3. Maybe even better, you know, possibly a 10-1. We have had such bad locker room and culture problems for 15 years now. It's just too early for me to say that that's all done with now.
I think that's completely fair to say. You know, I like to rile up the Canes fans on Twitter, but I mean, I have my very unpopular opinions most of the time. We're not going to know what this team is made of until shit hits the fan, honestly. Like,
correct. 100% correct.
We're like, it's not going to matter if we go out and win by 30 against UAB. That's not going to be the sign and the answer to, oh my gosh, like this is the, you know, these are the old Canes. It's going to be, and I said this last year too, I kept telling people, don't be surprised if this team starts 0-2 when they lose to Florida and UNC. That is going to be the test of new Miami. Is, are you going to rebound after this, or is it going to ruin your season? And so what's going to happen next week if we're 1-0 and we go up to Louisville, a game that Jordan and I are both scared for, what's going to happen if we fall behind 24-10 in the third quarter? You know?
If you look at it in a micro sense, you go, okay, King is an upgrade over whatever the hell his name was, Jaren Williams. And then you look at some offensive line stuff. You're like, all right, Jared Williams, is he an upgrade over, you know, let's say, you know, it's really Zion, and then you talk about bumping Scaife inside, which I think he's going to be a really good guard. And you're like, okay, we brought the JUCO kid in. He's got to be good. Is Campbell guy better than Zion? Well, yeah, probably. You know, Gaynor has to get better than he was a year ago because it's been another year. So you're looking at all these micro level things. And on offense, you're like, well, it's got to be better, right? Well, the defense is just good enough. Well, is losing Garvin and Rousseau or Phillips, who, again, has retired before and hasn't played a snap in forever. I mean, I think he might be Mr. Glass. You know, he might have the Mike Stanton curse. Micro level, I think those are misses, right? Those aren't good things. Obviously, at the micro level, Jared Williams III, losing him was a big deal, right? Just position to position. Who's your replacement, right? Who's your next guy up? Linebacker-wise, I mean, those two guys weren't very good, but who the hell have they recruited in? Defensive backfield, I actually think if they're being coached properly, they should be good. It's a lot of experience back there. Gervin and Bolden and Carter and Blades and Ivy, those guys have played a ton. So that was five guys who have played a lot. D tackle wise, everybody talks about Silvera. I don't remember him doing anything much either. If you ask me if Willis did sit, hell yeah, he was. We saw him, right? Like, you remember him. You were like, ooh, he changed a couple games. Like, I don't. Nobody else is doing that. I mean, Rousseau did it, but he's gone. So
that's what we've been saying about that's what Jordan and I have been saying about the defensive tackles all offseason, is that,
where are they?
I mean, they're decent, but they're not a game changer.
And they could be, maybe. I don't know. Hell, we'll see what the S&C coach did with them. But I think that now if you look at the macro and then look at the kicking situation, right? You're like, oh, well, we got an upgrade at kicker, right? Oh, shit, they brought a new guy in. Manny Diaz decided to change the whole team. If the fucking kicker changed the whole quote-unquote team, what the hell have you been doing, buddy? I mean, he really wants to be an ESPN guy more than he wants to be a damn coach sometimes. But – because that's some dumb shit ESPN would say. But here's your problem. It's the same defensive coordinator who's been recruiting no linebackers. It's the same DB coaches who have let guys just walk right past the damn kids, and they're always confused back there, right? It's the same D-line coach who you're like, Rousseau did great, but Garvin, what about the D-tackles, right? It's the same special teams coordinator who could never get a good return off, who didn't pick the right returner.
Special teams coordinator.
But who didn't pick the right returner until later in the season when he put KJ Osborne back there and finally we saw some stuff happen. The coverage team sucks. They get punts blocked even though they have a really good punter, and the kicking game obviously sucked, but he didn't recruit anybody in at the time, and they didn't know that kid was 4-for-50 in high school and he couldn't make a field goal. I mean, the damn data tells you that. So there are some macro level things that make you go, oh, shit. Yeah, it sounds really good, and I think Lashley's a massive upgrade over Reno's. If you had told me you could have Lashley, I said, sure. I think Lashley's an upgrade over Reno's. I think there are some micro-level things and some macro-level things, but I think you have to look at it where the overarching thing is just what you guys just said. It's when the shit hits the fan, when you get it, when you have a weird, you know, Bill Conley always calls them luck, but it's timing and preparation. My dad always said that. Luck is not real. It's timing and preparation. When you have a moment happen that sucks, you throw a pick six. That happens. Shit happens, right? Do you just fold or do you bounce back and score three touchdowns? When you give up a touchdown, Ed Reed would have stared another guy in the eyes, gotten in his shit, got him straight, and then they would have been fine the rest of the game. Or do they start bickering and arguing, pointing fingers, and it all collapses? Does this new guy miss one kick and it's like, oh, damn, this place is jinxed? You know, like, but are they even going to block for the new guy? Is a scheme set up right? Do you even know how to coach snappers, holders, and kickers? Like, is that what the Packy guy does? Who the hell coaches the holders, kickers? You know, I don't know.
I was so excited going into this episode, and I have been brought down.
You always say that about me, but Maybe that's the heel thing, but I didn't do it on purpose.
That's why I always love talking to you, because you think a lot differently from the majority of Canes fans.
Sure, and I'm an asshole, but I think in the end of it all, I think I'm excited about some stuff. There's no reason a Jordan-Mallory combination shouldn't be fantastic. There's no reason those three safeties shouldn't be great. There's no reason the two-starting corners shouldn't be great. There's no reason the Quincy Roach kids shouldn't be awesome or Silvera. Those are talented damn guys. I think having the Williams kid at tackle, bringing in – you know, at left tackle, still shaky. I never thought the Campbell guy was that great. I like Gaynor. I was high on him when he was signed. I went crazy about him. I remember right where I was sitting when I wrote that up. I was sitting in Willamina, Oregon, in the head coach's classroom. I believe, let me see. So that would have been February. I think it was a snow day. I think it was one of the first times I've ever had that in my life, being from Florida. I'm looking out at the snow. Like, you know, I think I was, you know, I almost remember right where I was when that happened, when I wrote that. I mean, I was into, I think he's going to be great. I'm excited about the JUCO kid. I like Cameron Harris. I like the freshman more, maybe, but that could be a little fanboy of me.
So do NFL evaluators.
Yeah, I think the receivers should be really good. I don't understand why they drop so many damn balls. But see, a lot of times people don't train. Here's a weird parting shot for you. A lot of times people don't train visual performance, and visual performance is a really big thing. Like, do you run the stupid ladder while looking down all the time, or do you actually train people to have to move based on movements of other people? So, like, if I want a DB to play really well, I'm going to put a receiver. I'm going to be a coach, right? I'm going to be a receiver. You're going to run this drill we've talked about. We're just breaking on slants, right? And I'm going to push that slant to 5 yards more like a glance, then 3 yards like a slant, then 1 yard like a now. And then I'm going to make you like react to me. And then one time I'm just going to run a speed out straight to the left. You're going to have to react to me each time, and your eyes are being trained. So it goes visual first. Your eyes work first. Then they trigger your brain, so cognitive. And then it triggers the motor skills that you've developed. So have you properly developed that motor skill? So if you're not doing visual performance, you're never seeing shit out there. That goes for a receiver. That's a quarterback. That's linemen. That could be linebackers and making keys and reads. And that could be DBs for sure. That's punt returns and kick returners. I mean, you wonder why a guy, like, a ball goes right through his arms. They're not training visual, cognitive to motor skill response. So if you're not doing that, a lot of people don't. You know, they just do the same damn drills, like go over the running back drills. Oh, God, don't get me started on running back drills. Run over these bags. One guy might slap you with a stupid thing. When do you ever react to a linebacker in that drill? When does he have to pick a hole, cut through it? It doesn't have to be a contact drill. It's not what I'm saying. But when do you have two coaches, right, two GAs, whatever the fuck, and you have them, you know, kind of walk around, jump into little areas of trash cans, and there's one empty hole, slow two, fast through. Now there's a linebacker. He shows. What do you do off that? Linebacker goes left. You've got to cut and go right. That's all visual, cognitive, to develop motor skill training. Are you doing that? Because I'm going to tell you right now, many, many, many college coaches live and die on the stupid bags, and all of their drills are what's called close-ended, meaning that it's just start to finish, and there is no – they're change of direction drills. There's no agility. And agility means to actually have to read and react to somebody. So a lot of people don't understand that. Agility ladder, when you read and react to any shit that happens on that, you don't. It's a change – I don't even know what the fuck it is. It's a warm-up ladder. But is it a change of direction drill or an agility drill? There's differences. And then is it position specific? How close to Bondarchuk's top of his pyramid, a competitive event, are you getting? And that's what you have to do. There is special development and special preparation stuff you can do in the middle, right? But eventually you have to do the competitive event stuff that feels just like a damn situation in a game. And absolutely. I don't know if everybody does that. I think a lot of people harp on those stupid everyday drills that aren't real. I tell you, the Duke running back coach is some of the best ones. Still uses a few too many bags for my taste, but he uses the best ones. And there is no, like, get your knees up. Like, no, you run how you run. And our job as speed coaches, right, as movement people, I feel like I'm pretty good at movement stuff. Our job in a movement world is to get you to move that way faster and in a quicker visual cognitive response to your motor skill. It's not to pick your knees up. Like, that's never going to work. It's so dumb. Because when the game is on, is that bag on the ground that you have to step over? No. No, the ref's not like, hold on, we got to throw that bag out there. No, it's so stupid.
You think about things in such a different way that I do. Okay, so before we let you go, give me score prediction for Thursday and win-loss prediction for this season.
Oh, shit. I'm the worst score prediction guy of all time, but I'll say
– you got to do it, man.
35-12.
Okay. All right.
Some odd-ass score.
What about – yeah, that's a weird-ass score. That's a lot of field goal for UAB. Okay, and then what about win-loss record?
I'm going to say what they should be, not what – you know, so I'll be positive here. I'm going to say what they should be, and it's 9-2. Based on the schedule, this Jokers should go 9-2. I'm going to tell you what I think they should be. And the reason that for that is if I say they're supposed to go 7-4 and they do, people are like, well, they went what you thought. So you didn't think they had – no. So I'm going to do what they should do, or dude should either be very, very much on the hot seat or shit canned. So I think 9-2. I'm going to say they should go 9-2. And right. If they don't, there should be a lot of conversation. You know, who does Blake James know? So it's either going to be Blake Baker or Rhett Lashley after that.
Well, that's another conversation to be had. But Justin, we appreciate you coming on, brother. We're excited to get you on again next week, talk some Louisville, and talk to you throughout the season, man.
Yeah, let's do it. I love Louisville. I love Satterfield. He's a great coach.
Yeah, yeah, we're worried for that game. But yeah, brother, we will talk to you next week, man. Have a good one.
You guys, you too.
You're the man.
See ya. Cool, man. Well, anything else we got to cover before we wrap up?
That guy is just – I love Justin. That guy is like a really smart football version of Doc.
Oh, yeah. No, it's hilarious, like, and informative. You know, you ask him one question, and then he just drops like an academic book on sports science and how it relates to football.
Dude, I love
– okay. I
love talking with that guy, man. I mean, he just gives you a different answer to questions that usually just get basic, this, and this about the Canes and everything. I really like the way he looks at it. But this is it, man. We hit man's game on Thursday. We are no longer just an off-season podcast. We're in it. This is it.
I'm so pumped.
This is it, baby. 40 or what's 2 days? 48 hours. We'll be kicking off.
Yep.
Dude. It's time. It's the rebirth.
I am going to crush half of a 12 pack of Mountain Dew Zero at least. An unholy amount of Mountain Dew will be consumed by yours truly.
Let's get weird and let's get a goddamn W. Until next time, are we doing a show after the game on Thursday or on Friday? What do you think?
Let's do it Friday because I think we're going to be broadcasting ourselves. And then I have some commitments after that. And then Friday, let's do a show. Is that cool?
That sounds great.
Okay. But I believe if all goes according to plan, we will be doing like a YouTube live broadcast of Marsh and I getting hot wing sauce all over our face and drinking Mountain Dew and, becoming fully aroused by De'Aaron King and Rhett Lashley.
Yeah. It's going to be a sight for sore eyes. Hide your kids, hide your wives. Tell them that Marsh is in season mode and he is back. All right. Thursday. I will see you there. We're 48 hours and 14 minutes from kickoff. Go Canes!
Go Canes, baby.